Rainmaker FM.
And welcome back to the Writer Files. I'm still your host, Kelton Reed, here to take you on another tour of the habits, habitats, and brains of renowned writers to learn their secrets. In part two of this special edition of the show, two writers joined me to opine the death of one of the most influential forms in the history of the written word. I pose the question that many great writers have pondered stretching across the last two centuries: is the novel dead? And maybe a more up-to-date version of that question is, did the internet kill books? And of course, these are famous, almost cliche, theoretical discussions that writers often chew on over very stiff drinks, and they raise hackles for those of us who adore them, of course. But what you won't find here is a highbrow literary dissertation or even a very strict definition as to what the novel is or isn't. But you will find a lively discussion between friends who care about the writing life and its future. Robert Bruce is a renowned voice actor, poet, fiction author, and copywriter, as well as the vice president of Rainmaker Digital and the guy who runs the Rainmaker FM network. And Adam Skolnick is an award-winning journalist, author, and a returning guest to the show. His first book, One Breath, was published by Crown last January, and his work has appeared in publications including Playboy, the New York Times, and many others. In part two of the file, Robert, Adam, and I discuss how digital culture has exploded traditional forms of writing, on the millennial generation's preference for paper books, why it's so hard to define the novel in the internet age, how clickbait is killing journalism, and why the novel will never die. If you're a fan of the Writer Files, please click subscribe to automatically see new interviews as soon as they're published. And if you missed the first half of this show, you can find it in the archives, on iTunes, on writerfiles.fm, and in the show notes. This episode of the Writer Files is brought to you by Audible. I'll have more on their special offer later in the show, but if you love audiobooks, or you've always wanted to give them a try, you can check out over 180,000 titles right now at audibletrial.com/rainmaker. This episode of the Writer Files is also brought to you by Digital Commerce Summit. We'll have more about that unique event for digital entrepreneurs later in the show, but you can check out rainmaker.fm/summit for all the details on an amazing educational and networking event.
Let me just say for the record, there's nothing, I think you guys would agree, there's almost nothing as beautiful and more desirous to hold in this world than a book, right? As an object, right? Or to own. And to have, you know, a bookshelf and to have it filled with books and to go to a bookstore. But the thing, like the comparison to vinyl is interesting in that it's hardly a blip in terms of, you know, actual sales. Like, right, these are serious collectors, not all of them, but for somebody to go out and get vinyl, and yes, it's growing, but it'll never be what it once was, right? Mm. And that's, who knows, but maybe that's where books are going. I don't know. I hope not. I only want more and more and more bookstores. It's funny. I went through a phase a couple of years ago of buying Kindle books, and it was fine, and it was convenient, and it was all these things. It was all these kind of sterile, you know, reasons for doing so. And just in the last, I don't know, year, I've been restocking the old bookshelf with physical books. And again, I'm older, I'm not 22, so maybe that generation is going to respond differently to these things and whatever. And maybe they, who knows, there's a lot of book readers in every generation, but I'm going back to physical books. I don't know mm-hmm. if you guys ever.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's the trend. No, that's the trend, and it's just going to be buoyed because, you know, the big five publishers. I think you kind of alluded to it before, but we didn't really say it. The big five publishers have all signed pricing deals with Amazon, and so this deeply discounted era of ebooks is over. It's not happening anymore. So ebook prices are up. They're more comparable to what a paperback would cost, and hardcovers are are still discounted on Amazon. So you could get, for instance, my book, which the publisher prices at like $26.99 for a hardcover book, which is expensive for a book. You could get it for $17.99 on Amazon, which is only $5 more than the ebook. And so I think that's part of the reason it isn't, like you said, it is an Amazon world, but it's not necessarily an ebook world. And what happened with LPs is other mediums took over so completely and wholly that other technology came in that we all abandoned LPs, but that has not happened with books. So, you know, it could happen, yeah, but I don't know that it will, because we haven't totally given up on it ever. And I think, what is it, about 50% of the market now is ebooks, which is, you know, that's a lot, but it's certainly not enough to totally make them irrelevant. And like you said, you're coming back to it. I'm the same way. I'm on the road a lot for 8 months a year, for the last like 8 years, 9 years, I was on the road. And so I got into Kindle because it was just an easier way to keep reading. But now when I'm home, I like to have a hardcover. You know, I like to have a hard copy, whether it's a paperback or a hardcover.
Shut off the f-ing phone and the laptop.
Yeah.
Open a book.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you are competing with the internet for your always. Own attention always. And, you know, I mean, I think that's when you go back to, you know, like just Google, is the novel dead? You know, one of the more recent articles that people talk about from The Guardian, which is going through its own issues as we speak, Will Self, this novelist, most recently, I think, for obvious reasons to promote the launch of one of his more recent books, you know, wrote this piece for The Guardian. Is the novel is dead. This time it's for real. Don't we see these like every couple of years?
Yeah.
And someone tries to tackle it and kill it. And
Right. Yeah.
And it happens in every industry. Does it not?
Yeah. And then it comes back around. And certainly this, the title of this episode of The Writer Files is meant to engender discussion and clicking and getting to listen, which is part of the problem, the very thing that we're talking about, right? But it's not completely disingenuous in my mind, because I really do think as a form and as a sellable object, you know, the whether we like it or not, and I do not like it, the culture is moving on, and you can't. I mean, have either of you guys read David Shields? He's probably most well known for his book Reality Hunger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one.
Highly recommend anybody listening to this. Actually, Brian Clark gave it to me a couple of years ago, and I think it rewired my brain. I can't remember, it had been years since I'd ever picked up a novel. I tried a couple of times, you know, recommendations people had given me. And this, I guess, we're maybe switch for a moment at least into the idea of the novel as form instead of object. It had been years since I'd picked up a novel and been able to get past three or four pages or two or three chapters. It just falls from my hand, right? Mm-hmm. And whatever. I'm a victim of the culture that we live in, the internet age, everything flashing constantly at all times toward us and into my eyes and brains. But he makes this case in Reality Hunger, David Shields, and it's really, really compelling, about kind of the furtherance of art. In every art, every form has, it evolves, right, over time. We know this. This is the most basic of ideas. But the novel, generally, one of the points that he makes in this is that we're all still trying to write Jane Eyre. And it has an absolute, and this is not wholly true. Of course, that's not, you know, there's all kinds of experimentation going on and all that. But as a whole, in terms of the big industry, in terms of what people buy and what people are reading, you know, it's like we're stuck still in the 19th century. And for some reason, this one form has evolved very little. You could argue that he's not completely right. I think he would probably agree. But it is interesting when you compare that to things like television, music, art, fine art, where there is evolution, there's evidence of it, but not in the sense, it doesn't seem to me anyway, not in the sense that we see it in other forms.
Hmm. Yeah, well, a couple of points come up, and I do love Reality Hunger by David Shields. A Manifesto by Damon Shields. It's a good one. It's one that I keep around and crack open every once in a while just for fun. It's little bite-sized pieces, and it's all very compelling. But there's something about, just to come back to, you know, kind of the medium is the message idea of, you know, like the book conveying kind of the empathy of the storytelling, and the fiction obviously gives you kind of freedom, as Adam says, you know, kind of that magic piece of yep. the writing. But a couple things. Science says literary readers understand emotions better than commercial fiction readers. Interesting. Something that that we've talked about, at least Michael Gripko and I, the neuroscientist, a study saying that literary fiction helps readers empathize. And coming back to the medium as the message idea, there was a recent study that concluded, this was in the Wild Detectives. John Bradley wrote a piece called The Medium is the Message, How We Read, How It Affects Us. I guess the idea that a recent study showed that college students prefer paper to eBooks at an alarming rate, almost 9-1. And I think it has something to do with comprehension and maybe that empathy piece. But, you know, they're asking the question, does our preference for paper spell the death of eBooks or vice versa? Isn't that a question we're always going to have as hybrid readers, all three of us? You know, I love the feel of a book. I feel like I do understand or empathize better with fiction and or nonfiction if I'm reading a paper book, but I love the convenience of having, you know, to being.
You're going to get a lot of hate from the self-published Kindle crowd here, man. Watch your words.
I think that there's this, it's hard to separate. It's hard to know. Like, I think part of us, because we grew up loving books and there was no eBooks, I think that we might have this idea that we get lost in the world deeper and more entrenched in the world if we're reading it and we're holding it and it becomes this physical thing. I don't know if that's true though. You know, when I was first kind of transitioning from taking all notes on every kind of story that I was doing in a Moleskine to typing them into my iPhone, at first it felt very foreign, and it felt like I wasn't really getting all the thoughts I wanted out, that there was some organic piece of the hand to the brain that I was losing that used to come right out of the pen. And I realized that was kind of an illusion. So I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I think with millennials choosing to hold books instead of e-readers, that could be just more of the entire kind of throwback vintage clothing, kind of like the throwback grassroots lifestyle that they've embraced, which I think is sure. great. Sure. And I admire a lot. And so I think that it might have more to do with that than have to do with comprehension. I mean, unless there's been studies that I'm not aware of, I think that it's, whether you're reading it on a computer or an ebook or a book, I don't know that it matters that much, but as long as you're reading. But I do think it's interesting if people are embracing hardcover books, just because it's. I think that's more of I don't know. I'm totally spacing on the word, but more of just like that. It's a choice. It's just something that they like, an aesthetic choice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, to defend myself, I'm not. I wasn't the one saying, does our preference for paper sound the death of ebooks? That's something that John Bradley, he posed the question. And, you know, my feeling is simply that there's a place in the world for both. I know there's a lot of myths about kind of, you know, the millennial generation and how they prefer to do things. You know, they're just like everybody else. I think everybody's going to have their preferences. That generation in particular, though, grew up with the internet, and the internet, you've got all the answers to every question you could possibly have all at your fingertips all at the same time. It's hard not to click around, right? So we know that attention spans are shrinking because of the internet. You know, and to go back to the idea of the medium is the message, I think when you're on the internet and you're reading stories on the internet, that's why you're clicking around so much, is because it'll spur an idea. You know, you'll type something into Google, it'll answer another question, that leads to another question. You know, all of a sudden, you know, you're getting all the answers you need, when that's not something you could do 20, 25 years ago, right? Was Ask Jeeves around 25 years ago?
Yes. He would knock on your door and it would take longer.
We will be right back after a very short break. Thanks so much for listening to The Writer Files. This episode of The Writer Files is brought to you by Audible, offering over 180,000 audiobook titles to choose from. Audible seamlessly delivers the worlds of both fiction and nonfiction to your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or computer. For Rainmaker FM listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check them out. Grab your free audiobook right now by visiting audibletrial.com/rainmaker. I just hopped over there to grab Stephen King's epic novel 11-22-63 about an English teacher who goes back in time to prevent the assassination of JFK. You can download your pick or any other audiobook free by heading over to audibletrial.com/rainmaker. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/rainmaker.
Hey, Jared Morris here. If you know anything about Rainmaker Digital and Copyblogger, you may know that we produce incredible live events. Well, some would say that we produce incredible live events as an excuse to throw great parties, but that's another story. We've got another one coming up this October in Denver. It's called Digital Commerce Summit, and it is entirely focused on giving you the smartest ways to create and sell digital products and services. To get all the details and the very best deal on tickets, head over to rainmaker.fm/summit. That's rainmaker.fm/summit.
But seriously, I mean, you had to sit with a book. Yeah. You had to sit with a book. And if you had a question or you found something in the footnotes or, you know, you couldn't click around suddenly to another book, you had to actually stand up and go, you know, type it into a computer or ask a librarian, you know, where to find it, or, you know, go to a shelf, physically take it off the shelf. And then you had to actually read the book. You know, you couldn't just click to the page in the book that had the answer you wanted, which you could do now. So
one of Shield's chapter headings is books for people who find television too slow. And I think that, you know, it's obviously a where we're at in a lot of ways in the culture. But I don't know if he ever said it. If he didn't, I'm just going to make it up in the sense that he said it anyway. But I think a lot about the, websites in general, but one that keeps coming up for me is the Drudge Report. And whatever you think of it, you know, I'm not talking politically, but just in terms of the design, the style, and everything you've been talking about, Kelton. At one point, he was asked somewhere in an interview, and he said, he made the quote somewhere that this is my novel. This page, this single web page with all of these links spiraling out into the world. To your point, Kelton, this is my novel. And that's, I'm not going to say mind blowing, but it's certainly, if you buy it, which many, many billions of people every year do in his case, is culture shifting, right? Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, you can't, in one sense, you can't say that because that's just not a novel. Okay. Right. We get that. But it is interesting, again, to your point, Kelton, that what does it mean? I mean, that's the most interesting part of this
thing. I think he's misappropriating the word novel to make himself sound awesome.
I think that's exactly right. And he is a master of, he's one of these masters of, framing. Yeah. Which this whole thing is, you know, it's a matter of where you land.
He's figured out how to sell a novel. He's call trolling, something else a novel.
That's right. That's right.
We need to get David Shields on the show. That would be a fun one.
It would be. And he himself, Shields, even rejects the, you know, the publishing world kind of rose up and, you know, blamed him for this idea kind of being popularized in the last few years, the death of the novel again.
Yeah.
But he rejects that. He loves the novel. He loves the form.
You know, from me as a journalist, it's interesting because, you know, what we're talking about is, you know, you guys could be foreshadowing something down the line that becomes real. You know, the death of newspapers is something that is real. Mm. And that is something that the internet has and digital has destroyed, but is completely shifted and in many ways destroyed. If you're a mid-city paper, it's destroyed you. And even the LA Times is a shadow of what it used to be. And that was one of the great papers. And do they have good stories still? Yes, they have some great stories still, but it's still a shell of what it once was. And some of that is mismanagement by the newspapers themselves that allowed digital takeover. Some of it is not. And, you know, I think I read something not too long ago, like 50% of the journalists that were working, 10, 15 years ago are out of work, 50%. Mm. That's a big number, 50%. How that affects me as a freelance journalist, always being freelance, never working on staff somewhere, is interesting because a lot of those people that used to work in newspapers, they don't actually don't know how or don't care to have to sell their stories. So they're not really pitching. So I'm not really competing against all of a sudden this big, robust group of people. A lot of them have left the industry completely. Some are still freelancing. And so that's a greater competition for less dollars. Because at the same time, what's happening is you have places like Huffington Post and Vice and BuzzFeed, who a lot of readers celebrate, but are absolute sweatshops for writers. They're digital sweatshops and they're making billions of dollars. And, you know, Arianna Huffington is supposedly a liberal progressive, but what she has done for journalism, I think, is a net loss and a negative. And I think the same thing for BuzzFeed, although they have great stories and they have writers out there researching and breaking stories, no doubt. And they have people on staff that I'm sure they pay well. In reality, what they're doing is clickbait, and they're bringing in, and freelancers are getting paid very, very low rates. And Vice freelance rates are abysmal. Mm. So these are all true. And Slate, Salon, all these down the line, they're all doing that. And so, you know, that's a real thing. That's a real, you know, if you're talking about death of a form, that's a real thing. And and so what I would like to see in those cases isn't that I'm anti-BuzzFeed or Vice or Huffington Post for you know, some of them. They publish stories that couldn't get published elsewhere. And so I recognize that. But, you know, if you have CEOs making billions of dollars and, you know, buying $25 million houses in Brentwood, I think you need to pay your writers more and make, you know, there has to be a place for the middle class journalists to work and do their thing. It's only going to help your business and actually helps the world because we're out there, because then you have more people out there working and calling out, you know, people like, you know, any calling out industries, calling out individuals that are affecting culture in a negative way. And I think we need that. That's what journalists are there for. We're watchdogs, we're entertainers, we're all sorts of things all at once. And so that's something that I think is extremely real and happening right now that I think we need to pay attention to. And I'm, you know, I would love to see, I'd love to see journalist rates on web based platforms go way up because they need to, and there's money out there.
Adam, let me ask you something. Why is it, this is something that I just, constant question that comes back to me. Why is it, do you think that a lot of these displaced journalists do not just triple down? You know, they have the education, they have in many cases the great reputation from the places they've been and the work they've done. Why don't they triple down on their own site and their own, you know, whatever. Obviously there's an issue of economics and budget and all of that, but even just
putting
your own name down.
Yeah, I mean for me, I need to make a living. So if I decided to instead of try to sell a story to Playboy, which will pay me, you know, in the print a very, very good rate. You know, they're still paying great rates. That's an institution that, hey, listen, they're wrestling with the same economic realities as everybody else, and they're still paying their writers. So I respect that tremendously. And so I can go to them and I can make a living selling stories. If I put it on my website, I might not see income for a year, 2 years. I mean, I don't know. I would, you know, for me to be able to put a story that I invest that much time and energy in and expenses and then expect to recoup that on my website, that's not going to happen for me. That's why the people that have done well with websites are bloggers, because they are not putting expenses in. They're not going out chasing down stories. They're not doing what I do when I go onto a story. They're not. They're sitting in their office and they're just block. They're basically, they're curating news, and they're finding stuff and they're commenting on it, and some of it's entertaining and cool. I'm not denigrating it. It's just not what a journalist does.
Yeah, you then instantly become journalist plus business person, and
which is fine. And I know journalists that have kind of come together in collectives and tried to put their own app together of stories, and it's hard. You know, it's hard to sell that stuff, man. You need to have like to get that out in this big noise. You know, it's like white noise. You put it out into the abyss, and hopefully someone gets it. You know, it's a lot easier if we're looking at something.
Look at Dave Pell, Robert.
Yeah, right.
That's kind of an interesting aside, but I think we're veering off course here.
Yeah.
As much as I hate to say it.
Well,
bring us back.
I just want to say that I think it puts a premium on quality. And I think that's what's always going to come down to, is that we're always going to have these great novels, right? Those aren't going anywhere. That will just stand the test of time. We're always going to have great journalism that will stand the test of time. And there's always going to be clickbait, you know? But, you know, how that affects the novel is a good question. So just to kind of bring us back to the original question and kind of that, I'll just quote Will Self's question to bring us back on track. You know, Will Self is an English novelist. I thought it was interesting, Adam, that he wrote a book called Walking to Hollywood. And if you look at the title, or if you look it up on Amazon, you'll see that it's got this Ralph Steadman-esque kind of Hunter S. Thompson cover. But I guess it was a satirical novel about a British writer named Will Self, who goes on a quest through LA and some other places. But kind of interesting idea behind the book was the question, who killed the movies? So this is all very meta, I know, but here's his question, or at least I'll just quote the Will Self piece, "The novel is dead, this time it's real. There is one question alone that you must ask yourself in order to establish whether the serious novel will still retain cultural primacy and centrality in another 20 years. And that's the question: if you accept that by the vast majority of texts will be read in digital form on devices linked to the web, do you also believe that those readers will voluntarily choose to disable that connectivity?" And he goes on to, you know, post his own questions and answers. And you know, I think we partially answered that. Got to turn off the internet sometimes if you want to enjoy a book. Yes. And sometimes you just want answers quickly, and you're not going to be able to turn off that.
And sometimes
high-speed internet.
You're living in the panopticon, and you can't ever turn off the internet, and we're all screwed forever eternally.
That's why I go ocean swimming.
That's right. No, you got it. You got.
There's no internet there yet.
If you're listening to this in the future, in the panopticon, as Robert puts it, we're all dead, and good luck to you.
Hey, we're all dead. Hey, everybody dies.
That's it. That's
wow,
it.
This is really.
I think going back to Adam's original Herman Melville anecdote is the way forward for novelists. Is you do it because you love it. You do it because you got to do it. You've got no choice. This is true of any artist and any art ever. And you never expect, and again, the Kindle people, the Kindle self-publishers are going to come after me with pitchforks, but you don't expect to make a dime. There are ways to do that, absolutely. There's no question. But it, again, depending on what we're talking about here, if we're talking about art and we're talking about the forwarding of the literary form, I think that's the way to approach it. I mean, for hundreds of years, this has been the way it is. You know, yeah. I mean, they used to take actors out to the crossroads of town and burn them and execute them. You know, after they revealed the truths about the society they were living in, they couldn't handle it. So what do we, or what does the modern novelist think? You know, it can happen. You can end up in the nice big place up in the Hollywood Hills, you know, sipping champagne out of somebody's navel, but it's not.
Yeah, but are those people really happy?
Good point. My guess would be yes, but yeah. I get your point.
They are extremely happy.
it went from an Orwellian turn to a very a skewering of yes. Hollywood
I
culture.
Love Hollywood. I'll always love Hollywood. You can't ever get it out of your blood. Let me close my part of this anyway by saying the last book I bought was just a few days ago. It's the hardback. This is Norwegian Wood, Chopping, Stacking, and Drying Wood the Scandinavian Way. Don't know what that means, but this is where I leave you, gentlemen.
Thanks. Yeah, no, I have that on Kindle. It's actually very good. It's a good quick read. Adam, do you want to take any parting shots?
Well, I hope the novel's not dead because my next book is fiction. So don't tell my agent. He's going to have to sell it.
Yeah. I think I'll leave it there and I won't try to make it nice and neat. I think, you know, there's a case to be made, that the novel is alive and well. there's a case to be made that ebooks aren't going anywhere anytime soon, obviously. We all read them. We all love them. They have their place, and the internet's not going anywhere anytime soon. So I guess we just have to wait and see.
Well, I think actually my serious parting shot would be, you know, the key is that people are still seeking stories. We will always need stories. There's more forms to find that than ever before. The novel is still a viable place for a deep, deep kind of rooted down story that can take over your mind and take over your life for a short period of time. And hopefully shed some light on where you are, or just entertain the hell out of you. And I think it's still its own form, and it's deeper than you can get in a movie or a television show. It goes, you know, when it's done well. And so, you know, I'm always going to love it. And I think it's here. I think it's here to stay. I think it'll always be here.
Yeah, agreed. Great stories aren't going anywhere. As long as we have language and we share stories, and that's how we, you know, kind of connect on a human level. Right. So I do find it interesting that, that the best way to get a movie made would be to write the book, write the novel first. Because aren't most Hollywood stories adapted from...
Or do a deal with the devil at the crossroads.
Yes, that's what's happening, for sure.
Yeah. So yeah. To become a screenwriter is a very a treacherous road. But, you know, if you want to make a movie, write the book first.
There you go.
And write a short story, right?
Yeah,
there Isn't you go. It true? Most movie scripts come from short stories.
Short stories or longer pieces. I mean,
all those Philip K. Dick movies they're all short stories anyway.
Sure. Yeah. But I mean, for instance, what is it? The Girl on the Train, which is coming out soon.
It's a mix, you know,
runaway novel.
It's magazine stories, newspaper stories, short stories.
All the nonfiction stuff is great.
Nonfiction and fiction, long form, all of it.
Yeah. But anyway, keep writing.
Cool, gentlemen. Hey, thank you so much for including me. It was great to talk to you.
What's going on, man?
Yeah, awesome to have you both. I hope to have you back again on another edition of Writer Porn. So, you know, watch your inbox.
Yes.
We'll thanks,
see you guys somewhere in the hellscape.
I appreciate it.
See you out there.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this special edition of The Writer Files. For more episodes of the show, or to simply leave us a comment or a question, you can drop by writerfiles.fm. And please subscribe to the show to help other writers find us. You can always chat with me on Twitter @KeltonReed. Cheers. See you out there.